Raphael's animal summoning carves a predatory ovine, sort of a minimal unit of sheepy antagonism, that you can trace fairly continuously through Tudor dialogues from the 1540s onwards, culminating perhaps in the materialization of actually predatory weresheep in the pastoral New Zealand mise-en-scène of the wonderfully horrible film Black Sheep, whose sheep, souped up by a complete misunderstanding of SCNT, somatic nuclear cell transfer, a.k.a. cloning, do in fact literally and very graphically eat men and women. As they do so, these sheep become... Actually, you probably do need to. The fact that I said that means that I definitely need to watch it again. It's got to be more interesting than that. Thelma Rowell in me dictates that since I have an knee-jerk response, I need to rethink that. As they do so, these sheep become wolves, morph. Their skin stretches to accommodate their newly shaped, sharpened incisors. You might also kill the lawyers, all of them, or for that matter, anyone with a pen. That's what William Shakespeare and Thomas Nash have Jack Cade and Dick the Butcher do in 2 Henry VI, as Nash and Shakespeare splice together phrases from Cade's Kentish Uprising of 1450, Jack Straw and Wat Tyler's Uprising of 1381, the 1517 Uprising by Xenoglottophobic Apprentices, the Hackett Rebellion in July 1591, the Feltmaker's Revolt of June 1592, in order to create what's usually called the Cade Sequence or Interlude. Time will not permit me to venture more than a stenographic reading of the double plot of 2 Henry VI, but such a reading depends, for me, on the play's multiple invocation of ruminants, sheep and not sheep. Jack Cade enters the play in Act 3, Scene 1 as John Cade of Ashford, the Duke of York's substitute or deputy, seduced into a performance of the now-defunct heir to the throne, John Mortimer, whose face, gait, and speech he resembles. York recalls the headstrong Kentishman's performance in Ireland, where, outnumbered by a troop of kerns, thighs peppered with darts, he turned sharp-quilled porcupine, and then, when rescued, capered upright like a wild Morisco, shaking the bloody darts as his bells. Jack's skin-stretching performance, he's a porcupine become hybrid Moorish Morris dancer, depending on which sense of the Morisco you hear, turns heads. York's among them, and so he turns intelligencer, betraying first Kearns and now hopes York the Commons. The play begins then in Act 3, Scene 1, by essentially voiding the historical Jack Cade, whoever he may have been, in favour of a spectacular series of surfaces, or Cade effects, that York appears to manipulate. Indeed, in York's speech, Cade is recognised and valued as an unruly mimetic agent that parasitically eats its host, obliterating all sense of the original. On their way to the accelerated utopia, Dick ordains, when Cade grants his suit that only the laws of England may come out of your mouth, Jack pauses and sees a sheep. "Kill the lawyers?" says Dick. "Nay, that I mean to do," he replies. But adds the more open-ended, "Is not this a lamentable thing, that the skin of an innocent lamb should be made parchment? That parchment, being scribbled o'er, should undo a man? Some say the bee stings, but I say 'tis the bee's wax. For I did but seal once to a thing, and I was never mine own man since." And there it is, an innocent lamb, not dead yet. But there's a piece of vellum on stage at this point in the play, then for a moment Jack sees a sheep in that surface, touches it maybe, feels the sting of past acts of writing in the present. The arrival of the clerk from Chatham, a man who can read and write, "How now, who's there?" converts the stay and discovery of the prior acts of writing or refolding of animal skin that gives a bee's sting to wax into an immediate attack on whichever human relays, clerks, lawyers, etc., in the writing machine, find themselves caught up in the action. Things speed up and the sheep is forgotten, or rather transposed into other registers. Gloucester is described as a lamb and Suffolk a butcher. While Cade recovers momentarily in the figure of the skin of a live sheep, a biblically charged innocent, I should say here, I'm sorry, that vellum is the sheep's name, a biblically charged innocent lamb, however, is the elided term or missing actor of an institutionally sanctioned mode of writing. Recovering the occluded actor, unfolding a complex form or chain of metonymies into its constitutive links, and doing so by hallucinating the sheep, he opens the figure to other possible languages and contracts, sacral, pastoral, legal, and economic. Was it not for the interruption and Smith and Weaver's immediate reduction of the clerk from Chatham to his ability to write and read and cast a count, and who knows where Jack may have led us? Just as Jack discerns the material semiotic relays that make his world and begins to tinker with the figure, in walks the walking, breathing personification of institutional writing, a clerk named Emmanuel, meaning God be with us, a formula frequently used as a heading for legal documents. Let's kill all the lawyers. Look, here's one now. And they do. They kill everyone with a pen. All this talk of skin returns me to my epigraph and to Haraway's favourite trope for what I'd now call her human dog sheep tails, metaplasm. For Haraway, metaplasm names the key technique by which a biological as well as semiotic archive is successively performed to create all manner of differently animated beings and worlds. In effect, Haraway extends the conception of the figure into the world of biology, extending our sense of the figure as a tropic operator whose job it is to splice together words and things, signs and matter, in order to constitute worlds and maintain them. Crucially, metaplasm can signify a mistake, a stumbling, a troping that makes a fleshly difference. A redefinition of the trope provides no shelter from the fact that the world is populated by inhuman and frequently indifferent agencies, not our own. It's happened by accident. The choice of metaplasm as a privileged trope marks a step for Haraway towards an order of description in which it no longer makes sense to speak of an individual species at all, so much as of a companion species or multi-species crowd, a network or assemblage of differently animated actors, human, animal, plant, and mineral, who exchange properties, biological, semiotic, and figurative, as they collectively constitute the world. While Haraway's interest in vocabulary may seem light years away from 2 Henry VI, the model of the companion or multi-species echoes the language of popular protest, of commons and commonwealth, subsistence and utopia we find in the play. What manifests in the play as a hallucinatory stay of proceedings, holding back only for a moment Dick the Butcher's let's kill all the lawyers, represents in Haraway's terms a dawning awareness of the material semiotic work performed by all the plants and animals whose manufactured declensions constituted the writing machines of Tudor England. This is idling in a Gambian sense, an idling or tinkering with relays in the archive, out of which various pasts and persons will be made. Jack sees some of the network of human and non-human actors that constitute a parchment that stinks, sheep and wax, and this knowledge provides him with a weapon against his betters. The disorienting dose of reference, the palpable visness provided by animal skin, has a leveling effect that detaches him from the world produced by parchments. He hopes this insight, his synesthetic registering of how parchment can stain, might make a fleshly difference. In our moment, Haraway's redefinition of metaplasm represents one such attempt to engineer a figural event in our archive that she hopes will change the routines we have for constituting persons and collectives. By asking us to apprehend our relations with animal and plant others through the rubric of companion or multi-species, she hopes to constitute a difference in our ways of building collectives, in our rhetoric of description, and so of making a home in the world. Jack Cade's ovine summoning, as he discovers the figure of an innocent lamb in the surface of a parchment or a piece of vellum, is an allied gesture, a momentary levelling of codes that might make something different, thinkable, possible, knowable. Both try to tinker with the routine mechanisms of their respective writing machines, reaching inside to refold things differently. Beyond the broad thematic continuity between Haraway's own political commitments and the languages of popular protest we find in the play, metaplasm itself marks the play, the playtext of 2 Henry VI, in very distinct ways. As Ross MacDonald tells us, during the Renaissance, metaplasm was a crucial tool for maintaining metrical regularity while incorporating allusions to or quotations from other texts. Metaplasm and its allied tropes cause the surface of the text to ripple but not tear, registering the presence of other texts or designating a zone of absorptive poetic play. Metaplasm also happens to be the governing trope of the Jack Cade sequence or interlude, through the play's folding and refolding of differently timed words, events, and codes, such that the play offers us, if you like, a kind of palimpsest of popular protest. In 4.2, Jack is also the butt of an extended study in metaplasmic verbal play, as his fellow rebels refold his name in parody. back in Act 4, Scene 2, just as Jack embarks on his own becoming Mortimer, deploying a royal weed to absorb the commons, Dick and company carve him.